Okay, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Dr. Egosa Imaswen, and I'm a novelist from Nigeria. I'm here at Civitella, and I'm going to be reading an excerpt from my second novel, Fine Boys, specifically chapter 17. The first June 12th anniversary came and went, very quietly. The World Cup distracted the rest of the civilized world, while the Americans, who hosted the competition, changed their TV channels en masse to catch O.J. Simpson trying to outrun the police at 40 kilometers per hour. We kept busy watching football, not paying attention to the pressing issues that our country faced. Ken Saro-Wiwa had just been arrested. Who heard? Who cared? In Nigeria's first match on the world stage, we trashed the Bulgarians 3-0. Wonderful day it was. No one, not even those who maintained a fashionable aloofness when it came to football, could resist the euphoria. Banners of green, white, green, made with bed sheets or cheap plastic, flapped from the doors, boots, and bonnets of cars. We spent the evenings, as we waited for the games to air, playing matchups between the night's contenders on our video game consoles or on the small pitch in the middle of estate. It was the first World Cup I actually watched. Bloody Americans, being 6 hours behind us, made the match times particularly horrendous. Blurry-eyed from an evening of drinking, we would stay awake until 2 in the morning for an 8 p.m. match, East Coast time. Thank God the Nigerian team was based in Boston. Eastern time was easier to deal with. All the while, armored personnel carriers stood at the junctions in school. The student leaders still ranted and raved. Nobody paid much attention. Democracy was having a hard time competing with football. The days before Nigeria played Italy were fun. There was a sense of yes, we have arrived in the air. Did they not see Finidi and his doggy style celebration in the Greece match? Or Amokachi and his funky groove matched only by his funkier goal? Tambo came back. He had been thrown out of Bulgaria, and we added a short-lived suffix to his already long nickname. He was now Clement Oliver Tambo, Nebo of Sofia, Bulgaria. Considering the fact that he had spent his time there in and out of sleeping bags, he looked quite good. He smelt of Jand, that supermarket new hotel room smell of Johnny Just Comes. And Tambo milked this for every kobo. At the late-night drinking sessions before watching matches in which the Nigerians impressed and the Cameroonians embarrassed themselves, Tambo would be seen with two girls on either arm, his pockmarked face grinning ear to ear as he told them how clean Sofia was, how lovely the streets were. Streets that he had only glimpsed from behind wire mesh fences. But he was allowed to get away with it. After all, Nigeria was in the World Cup. Everything was forgotten. For the second stage, though, and everywhere in school, the session was palpable. We were going to play the Italians. Dirty bastards who thought nothing of the odd dive here, the dirty tackle there. We knew that at the end of everything, like the British commentator said in the 82 World Cup, skill always prevails. At times, my mind went to the country itself. Nothing was happening, no strikes, no student riots, nothing. Ejiro had come back to school after less than a week at home, complaining of the boredom. They said that the winner of last year's election had been abandoned by his friends. His running mate was serving in the junta as the foreign affairs minister. Governors recently stripped of their offices and from both political parties were busy hustling for contracts outside the offices of the military administrators. Nigeria played Italy and we lost. Nobody knew MK had been arrested and thrown into detention a day before. That morning, the rumors began filtering in. Not about MKO, no. They said that seven, I remember the number, seven Italians were drug cheats. Italy had been disqualified. Nigeria was going to meet Spain in the quarterfinals. Yay, good news. But it was a fib. The euphoria quickly disappeared. We passed the student union leaders shouting from podiums at the school junctions beside the military vans and finally stopped to listen. What? They arrested MKO? For what? I skipped the demonstrations when they began. They lasted for 2 days, and the only hint of them in our flat was the smell of tear gas filtering in through the windows. At night, when the students had been chaperoned back to the hostels and the town was quiet, my flatmates and I strolled to estate, to Harry's room, and listened to gist about the Wahala. Oh boy, if you'd seen what Swalim did, that guy is a madman, Ejiro said. Swalim was a lunatic who passed for normal because he was so articulate and always impeccably dressed. He had been to FGC Owerri, and was currently a year two law student. What did he do? I did not see it. I would have thought it was a lie if I didn't see it, Ejiro answered. I'm telling you, when the tear gas canister landed right beside us, I thought I was dead. If you hear the order. But Swalim, with a handkerchief over his nose, just picked it up, danced around in front of the shocked policeman and threw it back. If you see how the police pick race helter-skelter, it was so funny. But it had been hopeless. The nice officers were replaced by Korofos from the army barracks, and these fired shots in the air. The students remembered that they had mothers waiting for them, praying for their safe return, and ran. The mothers' prayers were answered. No one was killed.